So is this kind of a strange time of the year for you guys too? Or is it just like rocking right along like normal? This period in between Christmas and New Year's is always, it's almost like, it's the only time that I know I'm not going to do much of anything. And I don't worry about too much getting ready to do anything. And if I have a day where I don't go anywhere, it doesn't bother me. And then somebody says, can you do that? I say, sure. I have all the time that I need in these couple of weeks in between. But, you know, that's a gift. I guess sometimes I don't treat that too much like a gift, and I ought to. All right. So where are we in Job? We have listened to the back and forth between, we've seen the heavenly what many people call court. We know what's gone on there. We know why things are the way they are, although Job and everybody else in the world has no idea of what's going on or has gone on there. We've heard this dialogue, this back and forth between these three wise friends of Job's and Job on the ash heap. We've now seen this young man insert himself, and he just couldn't contain himself anymore and had to add his voice to what he's been witnessing and hearing. And so what we talked about last week were, first of all, his responses to Job, things that he wanted to say to Job after listening to Job. Today, we hear Elihu kind of turn his attention and talk to the three. Now, what we need to understand as we look into all this is that there are certain things that Elihu, when he takes in this all of this that's been going on, all this conversation, there are certain things that he still sort of gravitates to that are very much like Eliphaz, Zophar, and Bildad. But then there are also some observations that he makes that are very unlike them. We talked a little bit about that, in that we see where he talks about things like a need for a mediator, which is not something that they would have in their vocabulary or in their theological system. So all he still sort of leans towards God blesses those who are good and he punishes those who are bad. He sort of mediates and says there's a possibility for or a need for grace in this somewhere. He may not use the word, but that's what he's talking about. Okay? And so whenever we see that, we go, oh, that sounds a whole lot like what we know to be true in the New Testament, the gospel, the good news, that there is a mediator, that it's Jesus. It's not an angel, it's the Son of the living God. So what we get today when we get to chapter 34 is then Elihu turning his attention and making some statements first in this chapter about these three guys and their system and the way they see the world, the way they see God. And then if we get to 35, which we probably will, he turns his attention back to Job again and begins to talk to Job. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. Some of the stuff in 34 and 35, it's like Elihu is on a swivel. And he's talking to him, and he steps right over and he starts talking to him, and he's back over here. And then he goes in and he starts talking, not about God, but starts to kind of defend God. So he's kind of moving back and forth, his attention. You know how young people are sometimes? Do you have a young person in your life that just kind of talks 90 to nothing? Okay? You know, my daughter's 23, and when she was very young, we said, sweetheart, slow down. Because whenever she got going, if she was emotional or she was ramped up about something, she sounded like that squirrel on one of those animated movies that talked at 90 to nothing. You couldn't understand the squirrel until you taped the squirrel and slowed it all down. Well, that was my daughter at times. So Elihu's kind of like in that mode. He is full, and he is moving back and forth and back and forth, trying not to forget anything that he wants to say. Because he's saying, look, there's some things that you've missed, and Job, there's things you've missed, and I want to say what I need to say. Okay, from his vantage point. Okay, so here's where he talks to the three. And it says, hear my words, you wise men, and listen to me, you who know. For the ear tests words as the palate tastes food. Let us choose for ourselves what is right. Let us know among ourselves what is good. So, the first thing he does as he's talking to these three guys is he presents them an analogy and says, we are at, in fill in the blank, your favorite buffet. And what we're going to talk about is sort of the same way. Okay? You gravitate towards what you want. And he's saying as people say things about what's wise and not, they do the same thing. They gravitate to what they want. Now, do you know, have you seen that to be true in your life? People tend to want to listen to the things they want to hear. And they tend not to listen to things they don't want to hear. And he goes on in verse 4 and he says, let us choose for ourselves what is right. So if we're at the buffet, let's choose the good stuff. Let us know among ourselves what is good. Pick the good stuff on the buffet out of what is wise. For Job has said, now he's talking to the three, he's paraphrasing what he understands Job to have said. Job has said, I am righteous, but God has taken away my right. Should I lie concerning my right? My wound is incurable, though I am without transgression. Okay, so he is paraphrasing Job. Would you say that that's fair or unfair in the way that he has paraphrased what Job has said? Is that close? So essentially, you believe that Elihu is, again, what we're trying to decide is Elihu characterizing what Job has said fairly? Okay? And do you think then that Elihu is, so far he hasn't really extended your, he's saying, okay, Job, this is what I hear you saying. It's what we would tell somebody if we were listening to him and we were doing that reflective listening. It's kind of like, Job, I hear you saying this, but he's not saying it to Job. He's actually saying it to the three. I hear Job saying this, guys, okay? And that you're saying that what Job has said, and then I guess what you think Elihu is saying, Job has said, is that Job is saying, look, me and God are fessed up. I'm fessed up.
And
right. It's not like there's something that I have not gone to God with and that is unresolved. Job is saying it is resolved. There's nothing that I have not confessed or dealt with. I'm not saying that I'm perfect. What I'm saying is that I'm right in that I've not withheld anything from God. Okay. So you're saying Elihu is hearing him say that. Okay. We'll put that on the burner. So Elihu goes on and says, what man is like Job, who drinks up derision like water, who goes in company with the workers of iniquity and walks with wicked men? So, who else got that kind of press? All right. So Jesus got that kind of press too. So essentially what Elihu is saying is, Job, you've been hanging out with the wrong crowd. But that's the same thing. We go, whoosh. Centuries later, Jesus is on the scene. Same thing. Jesus, you've been hanging out with the wrong crowd. We have that vantage point. Okay? We understand it's a parallel kind of statement to make. But for Elihu at the time, he's saying it's guilt by association. And who knows, maybe you absorb some of their bad habits. Is this making sense? Company, the company that Job's been keeping, he's saying, is affecting him. And in verse 9 he says, for he has said, it profits a man nothing when he is pleased with God. Now here's another statement that is not related to that last one. Again, Elihu is paraphrasing what he understands Job to have said. He believes Job has said, it doesn't do any good for a person to please God. Why would he paraphrase Job as saying that? First of all, is that something that Job very well kind of has said? Doesn't please. It doesn't do any good for God, for anybody to please God. It says, it profits a man nothing when he is pleased with God. I'm not, that's unusual wording there. Is it profitable? And why would it not be profitable? Or why would that statement even be something that Elihu would latch onto? So what has Job said? What has Job said about doing good? What would Zophar, Eliphaz, and Bildad say about being good? Being good meant what would happen? Blessings. Okay? So here we have Job on the ash heap in his crying out. What has he said about that view? And then you get what Elihu says. His understanding is that Job has said that it profits a man nothing when he does the right things. Does it make sense? Elihu is saying Job, in what he has responded to you guys, has not agreed with your system. Because you're saying people get a bump, a benefit, off of pleasing God, doing the right thing. But Job is saying he's done the right thing, but instead he got the opposite. And he doesn't understand it. You see what he's doing here? So he says, therefore, listen to me, you men of understanding. Far be it from God to do wickedness, and from the Almighty to do wrong. So what's the issue? 9 and 10. Look at 9 and 10 and 34. What does your version say? So my version in verse 9 says, for Job says, it profits a man nothing when he tries to please God. In verse 10, he says, so listen to me, you men of understanding. Far be it from God to do evil, from the Almighty to do wrong. Why is he talking about God doing wrong or to do practice wickedness? All right. So if Job is vindicated and he's right about him being spotless, then the only conclusion in their system that could be made is that God is bad. He is evil and has done something to Job that he does not deserve. Does this make sense? Because, again, he's talking to the three. He's saying this is what Job said, but he's also talking to them about their system. For he, God, pays a man according to his work and makes him find it according to his way. Surely God will not act wickedly, and the Almighty will not pervert justice. Who gave him authority over the earth, and who has laid on him the whole world? Now, has anybody else done that? If we believe that God was and is and always has been, has anybody ever put this on God? No. They're rhetorical questions essentially saying, God is God. Nobody gave him that authority. He has always had it. You can't argue. It's not like it was delegated to God. Job didn't delegate it to him. Nobody else delegated it. God is God. If he should determine to do so, if he should gather to himself his spirit and his breath, all flesh would perish together and man would return to dust. See, that's the God who's God. So those other rhetorical questions were just to get us to this point. That if God decided to suck all the air out of the world right now, he could. But if you have understanding, talking to the three, hear this. Listen to the sound of my words. Shall one who hates justice rule? And will you condemn the righteous mighty one who says to a king, worthless one, to nobles, wicked ones, who shows no partiality to princes nor regards the rich above the poor, for they are all the work of his hands? God is God. He's in charge. He's sovereign. There is no. Okay. So this is the God. This is the God who's in charge. And so the problem that he's trying to bring out for these three, and the problem he's trying to point out with Job, is that Job's issue and the way that Job is, at least from Elihu's vantage point, what he hears Job saying is an indictment against God, and he's telling the three, you guys are not trying to deal with Job on this point, and you should. Because if Job is saying he's done nothing wrong, then it's that God has done him evil, but that is not consistent with what we know to be true of God. And that's what he's talking about right here. He's talking about what we know to be true of God. All right? Any questions? Any thoughts? This is kind of going, and it's kind of like we haven't gotten to a point where we really can have an application yet, do we? Okay. All right. In a moment, they die, and at midnight, people are shaken and pass away, and the mighty are taken away without a hand. For his eyes, talking about God still, are upon the ways of a man, and he sees all his steps. There is no darkness or deep shadow where the workers of iniquity may hide themselves. For he does not need to consider a man further than he should go before God in judgment. He breaks in pieces mighty men without iniquity and sets others in their place. Therefore he knows their works and he overthrows them in the night and they are crushed. So why would he say all that? While I may agree with the sentiment, I don't know that it's there. What is it saying about God? Okay. Well, God knows. Okay, we're just gonna say God knows, right? Okay. God knows our hearts. He knows what other people can't see. So, if this is God and who God is, the problem is it goes back to the fact that Job, God knows what's in your heart. So he's kind of, again, he's on a swivel. He's kind of swiveled back to Job, and he's saying, God knows your heart. And he's telling them, God knows his heart. And the part of Elihu that still gravitates towards the system says, Job, that means there's a problem. While at the same time, he's trying to present the panorama of what he's seeing in the discussion between the two. Okay? All right, John. He strikes them like the wicked in a public place because they turned aside from following him and had no regard for any of his ways, so that they caused the cry of the poor to come to him, and that he might hear the cry of the afflicted. When he keeps quiet, who then can condemn? And when he hides his face, who then can behold him? That is, in regard to both nation and man, so that godless men would not rule nor be snares of the people. For has anyone said to God, I have borne chastisement, I will not offend anymore. Teach me what I do not see. If I have done iniquity, I will not do it again. Shall he recompense on your terms because you have rejected it? For you must choose and not I. Therefore, declare what you know. Okay. All that. God knows. That's where we started. Go back to the previous screen, John, please. So, God knows. God does act. He does not let wickedness continue. He knows what's going on. He hears all this stuff. He sees all this stuff. He's not going to let evil win the day. Bottom line. I hear you. And it does beg that question. I agree, because we're not that much different. Yes. Do you see the weakness of a system? A system that seems to overlook certain things about the way things really are. You know, we don't always know what, you know, if Job is as old a book as we believe that it is, and predates the Pentateuch, I mean, if you predate the Pentateuch, then you're pretty much talking about something that, as a religious text or text that reflects the faith or understanding of who God is. Yeah. You wonder what was it that they had that they relied on in terms of revelation? And how did they record revelation at that time? You know, so what is it that Bildad, Elihu, and Zophar are relying on as the system? Because truthfully, we don't have it. We don't have a copy of it. Now, we might say some of that came down to us through King David in Proverbs, but that was still a long time after the events of Job are said to have taken place. Do you see what I'm wrestling with? What is it that they knew? Why did they have this? Why were they so wedded to their systematic understanding of God blesses those who are good and he smashes out those who are not good? you know, the only things that I have to latch on to in this is to refer back to Hebrews, and whenever in the writer of Hebrews' discussion of Jesus as the perfect high priest, and there being a temple which is not built with human hands, that exists in the heavenlies, that is the true temple that the earthly temple could only be a reflection of, a poor reflection of. And that there was a gentleman named Melchizedek who was a priest, in quote, forever. He was a king and a priest who lived simultaneously with who? You remember? Abraham, okay? And if we believe that Job is somewhat circa in terms of the actual timing of Abraham, okay, then we have people like Melchizedek who were priests. So there was a belief system that did exist, that was adhered to, that people acknowledged and recognized, and the person of Melchizedek being reinvoked in the New Testament is a throwback to that reality, that there was a faith, a belief, there was an understanding of God. God had revealed himself in certain ways, and people did understand. And still, just like now, people didn't get it. And just like you said, miss it. Now, we get all of this in what Elihu's saying, because is he saying all this stuff? I don't know. I don't know that he saw all that, but he's making observations and he's saying this about Job and he's saying this about the three, and he's trying to say, okay, this is how I'm seeing all this fit. And you guys are not dealing with Job on this issue that I think would be your strongest issue to deal with him about. Because if what he says is true from your system, that would mean God has to be evil to do things to Job, even though he should be considered righteous or vindicated before God for having done nothing. That would mean God's evil. And the issue is, if that's the case, then Job can't be right, because Job's not that way. And everything we know about God would prove that God is not that way at all. So we get down to Job speaks without knowledge, and his words are without wisdom. Okay, that's the first time that Elihu has, in this point, taken a step out and made a judgment, but he's doing it. Job ought to be tried to the limit because he answers like wicked men. Now, the reason he says that is because Job is saying that God is evil. That's his understanding, that God can do evil, and if God can do evil, that means there's something wrong with Job's statement. For he adds rebellion to his sin. He claps his hands among us and multiplies his words against God. Okay. He's frustrated with them because they won't confront Job about this point that he sees being a legitimate point against what Job has said. Any questions? Do we see this kind of stuff happening today? I don't think he said anything against God. No, I don't think that Job, the problem, what we're dealing with here is a theology of trouble. It's essentially a theology of evil. Why does evil exist in the world? And again, all of these guys don't have any entrance into knowing what went on in the heavenly court. They don't get that there is one who's been given permission by God to sift Job. And then again, would we say the same thing if we didn't have the end of Job that we haven't gotten to yet? The good news is we do have the whole thing. Again, the one thing that so strongly impresses itself upon me is how much of the gospel I have found in Job and did not expect to find it there. It's kind of like what we're gonna, what we've talked about when we talk about the Magi. The Magi responded to what they knew and saw in whatever revelation they read and had received, maybe because they were a part of that ancient kingdom that Daniel went to, and then the Hebrew scriptures is poured over into their culture amongst certain classes of people that could read, write, and study. And then these men encounter this revelation. Because they're trying to figure out what this star, they're trying to identify why it might be there. They come across some revelation that we don't have. I do not ever recall seeing anything in the Old Testament about a star being over the place where the Messiah would be born. Never seen it. Which means there was something somewhere else that they considered to be revelation that they read and believed in so strongly that they packed up the folks and went to Beverly Hills with the good stuff to go see the king. That's pretty amazing. We don't have that revelation that they acted upon. But what they were acting upon and what they responded to and what they found was not what they thought. They thought they were going to go and honor a newborn king that was a prophetic leader of the Jewish people. And they went and did that. That's not what they found. They worshiped better than what they understood. It is interesting that Elihu is the young guy, that he is the one who is trying to, in some way, reorient the three in their attempts to work with Job and deal with Job. In a minute, he's going to turn his attention, he's going to go back at Job. And we're going to hear what Elihu would say to Job about these things. And then we go to Elihu defending God again, who God is, and what his character is really like from his understanding. Okay. Right now, this is just Elihu trying to paraphrase and in some way position what he sees as being this relationship between what Job is saying and what these three are not focusing on, and who he believes God really is, and how certainly we can't agree with Job because that's kind of where we are. Does that make sense to you? Sometimes really hard to parse out, but it's, and it gets to be kind of, well, we'll just say it. It's hard to organize, but I'm not so sure that's not part of what Job's all about. Are we good just having gotten through 34 today, and we'll launch into Elihu on Job next week, okay? All right. So let's pray. Mickey, how about praying for us, please?